Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Arteries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The Complete Works of Aristotle, the Revised Oxford Translation, Vol. 2 brings together a major portion of Aristotle's surviving writings in a modern English rendering prepared by leading classicists. As part of the Bullingen series, it is designed for serious study while remaining readable for non-specialists who want direct engagement with the foundations of Western philosophy and early scientific thought. This volume continues the project of presenting Aristotle's texts with consistent terminology, careful editorial standards, and scholarly apparatus that supports close reading. Across ethics, politics, psychology, rhetoric, poetics, and natural inquiry, Aristotle investigates how knowledge is formed, how living things function, how communities should be organized, and how persuasive speech and artistic representation work. Rather than offering a single system in the modern sense, the collection reveals a thinker who tests arguments, refines distinctions, and builds explanations from observation and logical structure. For students, researchers, and motivated general readers, this volume provides a reliable gateway into Aristotle's methods and enduring questions. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, ethical life as the pursuit of human flourishing. A central strand in Aristotle's writings is ethics understood not as rule-following but as an inquiry into what makes a human life go well. He frames moral reflection around ends and functions, asking what the distinctive activity of a human being is and what kind of excellence allows that activity to be performed well. This approach leads to the idea of flourishing as an overall condition of living and acting well across a lifetime rather than a momentary feeling. The ethical discussion emphasizes character and habituation, insisting that virtues are developed through practice, education, and the shaping of desires. Aristotle's characteristic focus on the mean highlights, practical balance, courage, for example, is not the absence of fear, but the trained ability to face risks appropriately. He also treats choice and responsibility with nuance, distinguishing voluntary action from ignorance, compulsion, and mixed cases. Readers encounter a framework that connects everyday decisions to long-term character formation, explaining why pleasure, friendship, and social life matter to ethics without reducing ethics to them. The translation and editorial choices help readers follow key terms across arguments, supporting a more coherent grasp of how Aristotle links virtue, reason, and lived experience. Secondly, politics, citizenship, and the architecture of the good community, Aristotle's political thought is grounded in the claim that human beings are naturally social and that political association aims at some good. He studies constitutions, offices, law, and education not as abstract ideals detached from practice, but as structures that shape citizens' character and opportunities. A recurring theme is the relationship between individual virtue and civic stability. A city cannot be well governed if its institutions encourage faction, extreme inequality, or the pursuit of private advantage at the expense of common goods. Aristotle examines different constitutional forms and the ways they can degenerate, emphasizing the importance of the middle element in society and the balancing of interests to prevent domination by the few or the many. He pays close attention to law as a stabilizing force and to education as the long-term policy that sustains a regime. The texts also engage questions that remain current, such as how to define citizenship, how to distribute honors and resources, and how rhetoric and public deliberation influence collective decisions. Readers benefit from seeing political theory developed alongside empirical observation, as Aristotle compares practices across Greek city-states and uses these comparisons to propose reforms that are realistic rather than utopian. Thirdly, mind, soul, and the study of living beings. Aristotle's investigation of the soul is not primarily a religious doctrine, but an account of what makes living things alive and capable of perception, desire, and thought. He treats the soul as the set of capacities that organize a body into a functioning organism, which allows him to analyze life in layers, nutrition and growth, sensation and movement, and intellect. This framework connects psychology with biology, explaining why understanding perception requires attention to sense organs and why emotion, imagination, and desire influence action. Aristotle is especially interested in how cognition relates to experience, how general concepts are formed, and how reasoning can guide choice. The discussions can be demanding because they work through distinctions and puzzles, such as how the mind can know forms without being materially changed in the same way as physical objects. Yet the payoff is a richly structured model that links mental life to embodied activity rather than separating them. In these writings, observation and argument cooperate. Aristotle starts from common experiences of seeing, remembering, and wanting, then refines them into explanatory principles. For modern readers, the material offers a foundational vocabulary for later debates about consciousness, intentionality, and the unity of organism and mind. Fourthly, Rhetoric and poetics as arts of persuasion and representation, Aristotle treats rhetoric as a systematic skill that can be studied, taught, and evaluated, not merely as manipulation. He analyzes persuasion through three primary means: the credibility projected by the speaker, the emotional state of the audience, and the structure of argument. This approach clarifies why public speech requires both logical organization and a keen understanding of human psychology and social context. Aristotle also explores the genres and situations in which persuasion operates, offering tools for deliberation, legal accusation and defense, and public praise or blame. Alongside rhetoric, the study of poetic art examines how representation works, especially in drama and epic. Aristotle focuses on plot and structure, treating narrative as an ordered whole with causal connections, and he evaluates how artistic choices can evoke strong responses and illuminate human action. The emphasis on form, probability, and necessity invites readers to consider how stories create meaning and why certain structures feel compelling. Together, these works reveal a unified interest in how language shapes judgment and how crafted representation can disclose patterns of character and choice. For students of communication, literature, and philosophy, the texts provide enduring analytic categories without forcing modern aesthetic assumptions onto ancient material. Lastly, method, logic, and the ideal of demonstrative knowledge. A distinctive feature of Aristotle's project is methodological ambition. He aims to explain what counts as knowledge in different fields and how inquiry should proceed. His logical works develop tools for analyzing arguments, including categorical reasoning, definition, and the identification of valid inference patterns. He is attentive to the difference between arguing from reputable opinions and demonstrating from first principles, and he shows how scientific understanding requires grasping causes rather than merely observing correlations. This leads to an account of explanation that distinguishes material, formal, efficient, and final causes, a set of lenses that can be applied across nature, craft, and human action. Aristotle also recognizes that not all subjects admit the same level of precision, warning readers to match method to matter, so that ethical and political reasoning does not imitate mathematics inappropriately. The collection's scholarly translation practice supports this theme by keeping key technical terms stable enough to track complex discussions across treatises. Readers come away with a disciplined sense of how to construct and test explanations, how to clarify definitions before disputing conclusions, and how to avoid category mistakes. Even when modern science rejects specific ancient claims, Aristotle's habits of analysis continue to offer a model for careful thinking and for connecting evidence to principled reasoning. In conclusion, this volume is best suited for philosophy students, classicists, political theorists, literary scholars, and scientifically curious readers who want primary sources rather than secondhand summaries. It also fits anyone building a serious reference library, since Aristotle's influence reaches into ethics, politics, psychology, logic, rhetoric, and the sciences. The book can benefit a reader's life by strengthening habits of reasoning, sharpening moral self-reflection, and offering durable frameworks for thinking about character, community, persuasion, and explanation. Aristotle repeatedly connects abstract distinctions to ordinary experience, making the material more than historical curiosity. It becomes a toolkit for judging arguments, forming better decisions, and understanding how institutions and narratives shape people. Compared with many similar collections, the revised Oxford translation is valued for consistent scholarly standards and for presenting the works in a dependable modern English that supports study across multiple treatises. Instead of relying on a single interpretive lens, it lets readers meet Aristotle directly, with enough editorial care to reduce confusion without flattening complexity. For buyers, the lasting worth lies in scope and reusability. It is a text you return to for coursework, research, or long-term intellectual development. If you would like to support Aristotle, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.